Welcome to the Velvet Studio, Ottawa's Queer Media. My name is Luke Smith, and hopefully joining me at any moment now will be our co-host, Sebastian Plante. And joining me on the line is our guest for today, calling in from the Children's Aid Society of Ottawa. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. So my name is Andrée Guillemette, and I am a kinship and adoption supervisor with the Children's Aid Society of Ottawa.
Excellent. Now, of course, today's topic will be looking at the topic of kind of adoptions and fostering within gay, bi, lesbian, and trans families, and adoption of gay, bi, trans kids and youth, children and youth, sorry. So, that's kind of very much the focus that we'll be having for today's show. And I'm very much hoping that that Sebastian will be joining us at any moment. He's not usually late. He may have been caught in traffic. So do you see many cases in Ottawa of gay, bi, trans and lesbian couples looking to adopt?
Well, I can speak specifically to our numbers. Last year, we have close to 15% of our adoptions in the Ottawa area are with families that associate themselves with the community.
Oh, sorry, do you say close to 50%?
15.
Oh, right. Gosh, I thought I misheard then. That was quite a phenomenal a number. I mean, 15% is still slightly larger than what most people assume is the statistical number of GLBT people in the community. Numbers vary anywhere from 3% to 10% of the population at large. Do you think that it's possibly unusual to see a slightly larger percentage of GLBT families adopting?
I don't know that it's unusual. I know specifically in Ottawa, we have a great partnership with this community. We are very much involved with our Rainbow Forum internally. We participate in the Pride Parade every year. So we have some strong links to this community.
Mm-hmm. So how would one go about adopting in the Ottawa area?
Yes, and I'm speaking specifically to the Ottawa area. And specifically to public adoptions, because there are a variety of options for adoption in our country. But specifically in Ottawa, when we're speaking of public adoptions through the child welfare system, the first thing would be to call us at our intake line. And our website very much describes in great detail about the process of going through an adoption home study.
Okay, so what would the home study kind of entail? Because like you said, that's one of the first steps. So what would, I mean, if you were a GLBT couple and you know, what, and the, you're told about a home study, kind of what would that look like?
Well, our home study is both, it combines two pieces of information. The first one is the safe home study. It's the home study that is used province-wide in Ontario. It's also used in other provinces in Canada. And it requires a certain number of home visits and very specific questionnaires, along with a joint training that is provided, about 27 hours worth of training. It's called PRIDE, funny enough, in terms of 27 hours around the parenting and what it means to take in children that have come through the child welfare system, specifically around their needs, their history, and how parenting that child would look differently than other circumstances.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. We're just being joined now by our co-host for the day, Sebastian Plant, how are you doing?
For the day.
Well, just in general. We were just discussing some of the early steps involved, like the initial steps involved with adoption, which involves, as you mentioned, a home study, which you know, includes some visits and a questionnaire. Would the questionnaire include questions around, for example, the family environment?
Yes.
And would that capture somebody's sexual identity?
Yes, it does. And there are a variety of reasons for that. We, as I've said before, last year, close to 15% of our adoptions were with families from the community, both couples and single applicants. And so in being able to do a good matching process for children, all of the areas of someone's personal life, for all intent and purpose, is explored through a home study process.
Mm-hmm. Is there any, because, I mean, of course, there's obviously been some historical anxiety around GLPT families having their home lives sort of inspected, you know, to say the least. So is there a bit of, do you see more anxiety than usual with GLPT families?
I can't say that we've seen that per se. I think at times we've gotten a sense of relief and surprise at our openness to work with this community. In particular, we have staff in our adoption area that are from the community, and parents as well who have adopted. Some have not. Some are raising children that were born to them from previous relationships. But I think we get a greater sense of surprise at how open we are.
That's fantastic news. I mean, you were saying earlier, just to bring Sebastian up to speed, that around 15% of the cases in the Ottawa area are GLPT family adoptions, compared to the population of 3 to 10%.
Yeah, that's way above average.
Yeah, which is you know, fantastic news. Now, of course, one of the questions that I do have is, can gay couples adopt? And I mean, if there's 15% of cases, and surely that's a yes. When did that change come into place?
I can't tell you a specific timeline. I don't know that. I've been in this department for the last 3 years, and certainly adoptions with gay couples and single gay applicants was happening before then. So it's been going on for some time here.
Oh. How is the process different for singles?
Well, what happens with single applicants as opposed to any couple, for all intended purposes, is that you're not assessing dynamics around couple issues, around relationships and communication, mm-hmm. and parenting differences between the two. So when you're assessing a single person around adoption, those aspects don't necessarily exist.
Right.
However, you're going to want to pay a bit more attention to the potential around a support system that exists for that single person, mm-hmm. to parent this child.
And financials, I'm guessing, are a little bit more stringent or thorough.
It may. Perhaps not, though. That depends on every person's individual situation, for sure.
Okay.
What kind of training does the CAS workers get before going into these environments? I mean, you were saying that there were some people who identified with the community working with CAS and those who have adopted. What kind of training is provided?
We provide sensitivity training throughout the agency to all staff. We also have a rainbow forum internal made up of staff who work both with other staff, community partners, foster parents, adoptive parents, as well as a group for our rainbow youth in care.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's definitely a lot. This is very much a very meaty topic that has a lot of elements to consider. I mean, the idea of the community, I mean, there's been a lot of talks in the community around suspicions that perhaps Ottawa has the highest concentration of GLPT families than elsewhere. You know, do you know if Ottawa compares to perhaps, say, Toronto or Montreal or smaller areas such as Belleville or Peterborough?
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't have that information. It's not information that we've sought out, to be quite honest.
No, I mean, that makes sense. I mean, it's something that we can look into and bring forward on a future episode. That,
I actually did do that recently, just as a member of Capital Pride. I looked through the, well, it's 2008 census data, which is 7 years out of date. So strictly speaking, it's unusable data when you look at this sort of thing. But I do recall seeing that you can actually sort the tabulations in the census data for almost anything. It's actually a really amazing online program. And I actually found that Ottawa had the highest number of same-sex couples with children in Canada, both in terms of percentage of the whole and in terms of raw numbers. I have the numbers somewhere. I neglected to bring them. But yeah, Ottawa is definitely the most, and number two is Montreal, I think.
Oh, that would make sense. Yeah. Montreal is a great environment.
Well, also, I think there's a concentration of the English-speaking families here and a concentration of the French-speaking families in Montreal.
Mm-hmm. When trans folks apply for adoption and fostering, there is an incredible process involved in that. Are there any kind of considerations that are brought to the fore when trans folks are looking to foster or adopt?
Special considerations, not necessarily. In every situation, what we're looking for in terms of assessing any prospective adoptive applicant is that there is some stability and opportunity to offer the most stable environment possible for any child or youth coming into the home. So transitioning per se wouldn't eliminate someone from being a potential candidate to apply with us. Stability overall in their life is something that we look at with any applicant.
Mm-hmm.
So someone may be going through transitioning in a way that allows for a lot of stability, whereas someone else may be having some challenges and not be in the best position possible at that time to be an adoptive parent. That mm-hmm. doesn't mean it eliminates the possibility moving forward, but every circumstance is assessed on its own merits.
Why is there such an emphasis on stability when a child's life is inherently dynamic?
Well, I think what research has found is that children come into our system, unfortunately, with a baggage of difficult experiences.
So children in general are very tolerant of a very dynamic environment, but these are special cases.
I would tend to say so, yes.
Okay.
We are, after all, a child welfare agency dealing primarily with child abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And so that needs to be taken into consideration.
Mm-hmm. What's the average age of the children who are placed?
The majority of the children that we place on adoption are between the ages of 0 and 8, but our greatest need are for children older than that in large sibling groups, because we do place children right up to the age of 18.
Hmm. Somebody was saying to us that GLBT families tend to adopt harder-to-place children. In particular, that's a trend that has been spotted in the United Kingdom. Do you find that there is a trend in Ottawa towards placing harder-to-place like you mentioned, there's a greater need for older or sibling groups. Do you find that those 15% of cases are more along those lines?
I would tell you that we've had a combination, but to call it a trend is not wrong. We can certainly identify with that trend locally in that we have had a lot of success in placing older youth and large sibling groups, specifically with same-sex couples, where the children have done very well.
And I'm guessing children with special needs, with physical disabilities, cognitive disabilities, they also fall into the group of hard to place.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And they also tend to show up more often with same-sex families.
I'm sorry?
Do they also show up more often with same-sex couples?
I don't know more so. Our children coming in through our system tend to come in with quite a bit of baggage.
Mm-hmm.
So most of our children have some special needs no matter what.
Right, okay.
But the older youth with the more complex needs and large sibling groups, we have had a lot of success placing with this community for sure.
Now, in the United States, I mean, there's a lot of propaganda around you know, the welfare of the child around GLBT families, particularly in extremist groups down in the American South. You know, so that really kind of begs the question, what is the effect of placing these kids and youth with GLBT same-sex couples? You mentioned earlier that they seem to do well. I mean, is that the case, broadly speaking?
I would suggest to you that certainly that's what we've seen here. We have had great success, especially in situations where there's just so much openness in acceptability of all special needs and all desires, and we've just had a lot of success in being able to place children that would otherwise may not have found a permanent family.
Mm-hmm. Does the CAS in Ottawa try to place youth or kids that identify as GLBT with GLBT or same-sex couples?
Well, there's a combination there. Older youth have a lot of say in terms of where they want to go or where they'd like to be. And when a youth may make that specific request, we will absolutely honor it. But I also don't want to minimize the success we've also had where children and youth relating to the LGBTQ community have done well in heterosexual placements or single-parent placements.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that really speaks to just the level of acceptance that we see in Ottawa overall in the community at large.
It's certainly what we strive for.
That's good to hear.
Yeah. Do you have any follow-up questions, Sebastian?
Not particularly.
How can somebody find out more about adopting, particularly in, like we mentioned, same-sex couples? Because presumably we have a few listeners who fall under that bracket, or at least we would hope so.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what I can do is absolutely give you our adoption intake phone number here in Ottawa, which is 613-742-1620 at extension 2. And I'll also give you our fostering intake line, because we also have a need for foster parents. And if that's of an interest, the number there is 613-742-1620 at extension 1. Our website also provides an awful lot of information.
Now, is it possible to, because of course we have listeners to this show from across Canada, not just within the Ottawa area. Do the Children and Aid Societies across Canada offer very similar programs in terms of engaging with the community?
I think it's important to note that every province is legislated differently. I mean, we're all in Ontario, we're legislated under the Child and Family Services Act. And every Children's Aid Society is independently managed through a board.
Okay.
Across the country, however, the Adoption Council of Canada has a wonderful website as well, where you can get links to various agencies in your area.
So if, let's say, somebody comes across difficulties with an agency in their area, is it possible to adopt out of agencies in adjoining areas?
Yes.
Oh, excellent.
Ooh, okay.
Yes. In Ontario specifically, the Adoption Council of Ontario works extremely hard at ensuring that we are doing everything we can to find the proper home for every child in this province. And accordingly, we share homes that are approved among each other so that we can find the best home for any given child that needs it.
I'm guessing you don't want to move the kids too far, but in the end, it's more about placing them than it is about making sure they're in an urban center with lots of skate parks.
Yes, but certainly our primary placements are local,
yes.
But it does happen that we find the perfect family for any given child that doesn't happen to live in our jurisdiction.
I'm also curious about the exact nature of foster care, because to be honest, the only time you ever hear about foster care in the news is when it goes wrong. What is the exact nature of a foster care placement? How long does it usually last?
That depends. Our hope is always that a foster care placement is temporary and that a child can be reintegrated into their family home or with extended family members or community members that are known to the child.
Mm-hmm.
So it's meant to be a temporary solution, but long-term, it can be an optimal placement and can be a nice transition to adoption if no other option is available.
Is that, how common would you say that is, more or less?
How common is it?
For foster care to turn into adoption.
We do have foster parents who end up adopting children that are in their care. That percentage is lower than the percentage of I gave you earlier, the 15%.
Mm-hmm.
So it's approximately 11% of our children
That's
get adopted into their foster homes.
That's still quite high.
Yes, it is.
It's higher than I thought it would be, actually. It's quite pleasing.
Well, that makes sense. My family actually has gone through the adoption process, so I'm passingly familiar with it. We're obviously thrilled to have my youngest brother joining us a few years ago now. And, of course, my mother has since then gone into the world of fostering. I think she's a bit of a workhorse by the sounds of it. I think it's great, and I think the support that that the CAS offers is very important. I want to touch on that support because, of course, this is a massive commitment for anybody that they may have. Are there any supports for GLPT families in Ottawa that you're aware of that may come in handy for somebody who is fostering or adopting?
Yep, certainly. Within our agency, we offer a support group to families who have adopted. We also have a support group for families who've been approved and are waiting to be matched. So those are options within the adoption sector. And within the foster care sector, we have monthly support groups as well.
And now, you may or may not be familiar with Family Services Ottawa and the Rainbow Families programs that they also offer. And I know that CHEO and Sick Kids has a trans youth program as well, which is incredibly successful.
And I think Ten Oaks participates in the Rainbow Family Project as well.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember what the capacity, though.
Well, they generally work as a camp. But there definitely is supports available in Ottawa. There is, in fact, an agency roundtable, which you may or may not be aware of. I think it's called the Rainbow Forum, which brings together all of the service agencies in the city that deals with youth all into one place. So I believe that CAS sits on it along with Family Services Ottawa and the school boards. And it kind of creates a very cohesive approach to youth wellness, which I think is incredible. I mean, I'm not sure whether or not you'll be aware of whether or not this happens elsewhere in Canada, but how successful has this forum been for CAS?
I can speak again in terms of our success here. In fact, we are at that table, as you indicated. And like I spoke about earlier, we have an internal forum, a Rainbow Forum as well, that puts out a newsletter on a monthly basis and speaks to upcoming events. We're involved with the picnic in the park. We're involved. We have a float in the Pride Parade. So we have a Rainbow Youth Forum. So very much involved and very well supported.
Now, I did have a question, but it's completely slipping my mind.
That's a great question.
I know. It was like, it was at the top of my head, and I was like, oh, I need to ask that. And then the forum question came up, and I've completely just blanked on it. It will come to me.
Did it have to do with community support?
Maybe. Maybe.
Although, actually, this does bring up sort of a related topic.
Well, now I remember, but I'll let you ask it.
Well, I was gonna mention the topic of queer spawn, which is sort of an emerging community. Are you familiar with this? With this term?
I am not.
Okay, so queer spawn is children of queer identified parents. Whether the queer spawn themselves are queer identifying or not is a separate issue. But one of the interesting things about queer spawn is that they are sometimes, it depends on their parents, but they are raised within the queer community so that fundamentally, if you're to ask them what culture they are, their culture is queer. So if you have like a parent who's a drag queen, for example, you are raised in drag culture. Drag is your native culture. Mm-hmm. And it's in the past 10, 15 years or so where queer spawn have started getting together and realizing that they are, in a sense, fundamentally different from the ambient culture. And especially ones who are raised by parents who are very engaged in the community, whether in the activist side or the socialist side. Not the socialist, the social. Very different. And they have very different perspectives on the world. And they're it's also throwing a big monkey wrench into the idea that gay is not a culture.
Mm-hmm.
Many queer spawn are adopted or are foster children who transitioned into adoption, because it is one of the most common ways, especially for people who are engaged in that level in the community, to end up with children. And so you end up with this little pocket of children who are very different, but in a way that kind of, it's kind of weirdly comforting that, like, we have these children who are more culturally queer than people who've been in the community for a while, because this is the reality.
I mean, just for our broader listening audience, perhaps a way of comparing that is, if you adopt somebody who has a, for example, it's the Indian festival at City Hall this weekend.
Yeah.
So if you adopt somebody into an Indian family, then there will be a transference of culture there.
They'll be culturally Indian regardless of their birth, ethnicity.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you see that much when you're placing children, that the kind of a slow transfer of culture over time?
Or is this completely a new idea?
Well, I'm a little ill-equipped to answer it, in that we follow up with our families post-adoption placement for approximately 6 months to a year.
Okay.
But families don't necessarily continue to receive services from us after that point.
Right.
They can certainly come back if there's a need for support, but that's not the case in every situation.
Mm-hmm. And obviously what we're speaking to is very much long-term effects where, you know, the culture may be affected. The question I was going to ask earlier, which finally came back to me, I have a friend who had looked into adoption and fostering, and in the end they chose the route of surrogacy. Which, of course, is a phenomenally expensive process. What does the expense look like? I mean, in terms of financial commitment, what would that look like in terms of adopting or fostering?
So if you're coming in to foster with us and you're in an approved foster home, the cost of the care of that child is covered. So there's should be no cost to the foster parent, no financial cost.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of adoption, one of the criterias in your home study is around being financially stable and able to provide for the child or the children that you would be adopting.
Mm-hmm.
So the cost of the home study and that process itself through the Children's Aid, there is no cost. The cost that you would incur would be related to any typical cost from raising children.
Mm-hmm. And that makes sense, obviously, and is presumably slightly cheaper than the tens of thousands that it costs for the surrogacy process.
We've certainly found that we do receive applicants that have looked into private adoption and international adoption and find that the cost is prohibitive, along with surrogacy, and choose to come to us instead.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's important to note that there was almost a significant market for this in Thailand, where same-sex couples would go over to Thailand and adopt. However, just this week, the Thai authorities have blocked that process. Hmm. And now there are actually a number of same-sex couples who have paid for surrogacy or are now unable to access their children. So really, I think looking closer to home is certainly an important process. You mentioned earlier that there is a need for older youth and sibling groups. In the Ottawa area, how significant is that need?
It's significant. We place, on average, approximately 60 to 65 children on adoption every year. And that's a give or take number, depending on the year. But at any given time, we have, you know, a dozen children, I would say, that either are from a sibling group or older youth with more complex needs for whom we're actively recruiting. Our website actually provides a newsletter with profiles of children that are currently, we're seeking out specific homes for mm-hmm. them. And so it gives everyone an opportunity to get a sense of some of who our youth are and who our children are. And everyone has the opportunity to review that.
What are you generally looking for in a foster parent? And I say this because I could see myself one day helping out on the short term, doing some fostering. But it's one of those things where, like, a lot of people in the younger generations don't really see themselves as parents. I'm a PhD student. I'm in my 30s. I don't feel financially responsible, even though, you know, in the end, the rent does get paid. So
eventually.
Luke is laughing because he's actually my roommate. I don't really see myself as being a valid foster parent, but I don't think the system would necessarily agree with that per se. I mean, as a PhD student, I think I'm probably off right there because I've got other stuff to do. But in general, I mean, what are you looking for? There's a lot of people who probably would want to participate, but they don't see themselves as being valid foster parents or even adoption parents.
Well, I think that at times people sell themselves short about what they have to offer. Our needs are varied because, of course, the needs of our children and youth are quite varied. Mm-hmm. The role of a foster parent with an older youth is quite different than a foster parent to two toddlers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You're looking for an ability to mentor and support and, lead to independence. And that can look very different for any given person.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, being a single applicant, as you referred to yourself as potentially, you probably have a lot to offer a youth who is, you know, struggling to finish school and maybe not so sure about what they want to do moving forward and maybe isn't prepared to be in a position to commit to a parent relationship.
Yeah.
So having that mentoring opportunity is a great one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there's certainly elements there that you can empathize with.
I think I would be better suited for a teenager, especially one with a lot of lip.
Yeah. you may find a lot of parents who are prepared to take you up on that.
I sincerely hope that we've inspired or at least opened the idea to some of our listeners, because this is very much a worthwhile process. I mean, my brother is very much a part of the family. And, of course,
he's got lip. He's like 3 years old and
seven now.
Oh, is he seven?
Yeah. Well, got him like 3 years ago.
When did I meet him?
When he was probably three.
Okay. Yeah. As a 3 year old, he was already a cheeky little monkey. And like, even your Welsh mother was like, "Ooh," all the time. It was fantastic.
Yeah, no, he's all of the attitude. but I mean, you just roll with it. You roll with the punches and, yeah. I mean, not actual punches, you know what I found really interesting is how my mother's parenting style has changed. Now, but way back when, we're talking, how old am I now? 24. So about 10, 15 years ago in Wales, if you talked back to my mother, you get a clip around the ear hole, you know. It's like, one does not talk back to my mother. And then, of course, you know, the way in which children were disciplined changed dramatically with my younger brother, who is now 20. So just in 4 years,
mm-hmm.
there was a shift in how that was parenting style. And then my sister, who is 16, so there was another 4 years and then another shift in parenting style there. And now parenting style, again, is very different. Like, for example, my youngest brother, whenever he misbehaves, I would just be like, "Say sorry." And my mother was like, no, "Be sorry." Actually, feel sorry. And I think that's an interesting change. So my question is, if I ever get to the point, do you at the CAS see the evolving trends in parenting fashion and parenting styles with the training process?
Well, we would hope so, or else we're probably not doing that great a job. certainly, that's probably the area where we provide the most support. We have applicants who come in who have parented before and are later in life and have a bit of an empty nest syndrome and wish to continue parenting and come to us to fill that void. And we have young applicants who've never parented. And so the area of parenting technique, attachment for children who have potentially have had multiple caregivers and a difficult background is very different. And so it does require an openness to learn parenting in a different way.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's integral. I think when you go into this process, there has to really be an open mind to that learning. Mm-hmm. And I think having an open mind and an ability to learn is something that is significantly prevalent in our community, which may have assisted in that 15% rate that you mentioned earlier, which, of course, I am thrilled about. But let's make it 20, gosh darn it. Let's get more people fostering and adopting and taking care of these incredible kids and youth that we have. Thank you so much for speaking with us and enduring our rambling questionnaire, as I'm sure it was quite a challenge.
Well, I thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Absolutely. Do you have any closing remarks before we let you go?
Look for us at Pride Parade. We look forward to it. We have a great float ready for you.
Oh, excellent. I'm looking forward to that. And, of course, the picnic in the park, I believe it's in Hindenburg Park, is one of the signature events of Pride. Mm-hmm. Always a massive success. I think Ten Oaks, Capital Pride, the CAS, and I think the Ottawa Art Gallery are all integral partners there. And please, if you're listening to this, make it out. Go say hi.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a lizard on a leash. There was it's one of the most family-friendly events in the city that I've seen.
When was there a lizard on a leash, and why was I not there? I'm so jealous.
I know. It was true. It was true. Anyways, thank you so much for joining us. We're jumping to the B-52's Rome, whose lead singer just married her long-term girlfriend, which
yes.
is very good news.
B-52s is one of the gayest bands of the 80s. They're fantastic.
Absolutely.
Actually, late 70s. They weren't even considered an 80s band. They just had one hit in the 80s.
Still love me.
Anyway.
Anyways, thank you very much for calling in, and we'll be back in just a few minutes on the Velvet Studio.
Oh, alone, waiting for the light to go. Don't you feel that hunger? I've got so many secrets to show. When I saw you on that stage, I shivered with the look you gave. Don't you hear that rhythm? Can you show me how we can escape?
Hello and welcome back to the Velvet Studio. It was Queen Media. And that was Years and Years Shine and Years and Years frontman Ollie Alexander, who I think is adorable, is in and apparently an intense relationship with Clean Bandit's Neil Eamon Smith. We'll be listening to a Clean Bandit song.
How does one define an intense relationship?
Well, from what I can tell, from the...
Because from what I've read, they're just in a relationship... And they're okay being public about it, I think.
Well, from what I read is they of course, they're busy peoples. They are very busy peoples. And they see themselves, rather, see each other, not themselves, they all own mirrors. They see each other incredibly intermittently. So they might not see each other for, you know, weeks, 2 weeks, 3 weeks.
That's just a long distance
but then
relationship.
They'll see each other for like 3 days, and then it's super intense.
Yeah.
So that's how I would describe an intense relationship. I feel like that was an accurate summary of their relationship. based on media reports, which are obviously highly reliable. So says the media. So, uh-huh. Yeah. Speaking of media reports, do you know what? We might get back to the families thing in a minute, but you know what really upset me yesterday?
Tell me what really upset you yesterday.
You know what really upset me yesterday?
Really upset you yesterday?
I feel like this is going to be a Girls, Spice Girls reference. But no, it's, what really upset me yesterday was that the United Nations Development Goals stripped out any reference to LGBT rights. Now, previously they had been there, but now all of a sudden they don't want no LGBT rights in the developmental goals.
Isn't the Secretary General of the United Nations currently a representative from Uganda?
I don't know the Secretary General off the top of my head.
It is. It turns out, I learned this very recently, the Secretary General for United Nations, it goes on rotation. Mm-hmm. It's basically just, it's your country's turn, and therefore you're in charge for a brief period. Mm-hmm. And it just happened to be that, do you know what? We both have the internet right in front of us. I'm going to look this up, because I'm
that kind of
guy.
You do that, I mean, what do you think along the terms of GLBT adoption? I mean, I know that I will likely adopt myself once I'm in a position where that's a feasible option. I was actually joking to my partner. I was saying that...
He's from South Korea.
We're going to be talking about... we're talking to CAS about adoption to try and get the file through on William and Sandra. Oh, yeah. How did I not know Ban Ki-moon? Everybody knows Ban Ki-moon. Anyway, you totally threw me off my game there. Anyways, I was teasing Jake about adoption, which I'm sure he'll appreciate me announcing to everybody in Radio World.
Absolutely. That's how these things go.
Yeah, no, but what do you think about the fact that, you know what, 15% of cases, I mean, even a conservative, a generous estimate of the community is only 10%. And then when you narrow that down to, you know, the age range where you can be a parent, mm-hmm. You know, that's a very high statistic.
Well, I think that's a large part of it. Same-sex couples, without getting into surrogacy, don't really have the ability to produce their own bebés, generally speaking.
We have tried.
Yes.
With much enthusiasm.
The other thing is, I believe the average age of first marriage in the same-sex community is about 10 years above the average age of first marriage for the heterosexual community, or the general community. I don't know what we should...
And that would be a Canadian statistic, not an American one, being that they haven't had 10 years.
Oh, yes, they haven't really had, yes. And so even if you do want to have your own bebés, if you're a 35-year-old woman, every year above 30, the chances of certain common disabilities become more and more common mm-hmm. over time. Mm-hmm. And then, like, recessive genes become more likely to express. So you might have, like, a diabetic baby that, like, it becomes more common every year above 30. So you have women marrying for the first time in their mid-30s saying, you know what, I would rather give a healthy existing child a healthy home than risk producing an unhealthy child. Why not, right? Or yeah. Mix, you know, one of each. It's also pretty common for people to do surrogacy, to have one child of their own genetic stock and then just, like, adopt a whole bunch as well.
Make it sound like a bit of a mixed bag. If you are a GLBT family in Ottawa, and being that there's 15% of you out there, so there must be a lot of you folks, send us a message, tweet us at Velvet Studio One with your story. We'd love to know more about the realities happening here in Ottawa. And if you're listening to us elsewhere, what's the environment like where you are? What's the adoption process like where you are? Tell us the good, the bad, and the ugly.
How will they tell us?
Via the Book of Faces or through email and the website. And
such
so
as?
Such as what?
I'm trying to hint that you give addresses. And...
Oh, well, Facebook/ Velvet Studio.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Or velvetstudio.ca.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We have a Twitter feed as well, don't we?
Yeah, at Velvet Studio One. I mentioned that earlier.
Well, I'm just trying to get you to remind people that they can contact us.
I actually,
and how to do so.
So my friend that I referred to earlier who's doing surrogacy.
And encouraging them to do so at the same time. I'm just going to keep interrupting you.
Yeah. My friend of mine that does that did surrogacy, he actually had some difficulty with, and this is why I ask questions related to training, he had difficulties with one of his workers, and there appeared to be a hesitancy to place with their family. You know, his partner is in the Air Force. I mean, of course, they move around once every, well, however often military families, move around. Which, I mean, may have been a factor. And, you know, one doesn't know the ins and outs of these files. He created the impression that there may have been homophobia. But, if the training that the lady on the phone mentioned is true, then, you can hope that that isn't the case. And it certainly does not appear to be the case here in Ottawa, where there is a positive overinflation of GLBD families.
Mm-hmm.
Would you be looking to adopt now that you know that as a single gentleman, you can? I love how she described it as a teenager who's struggling with school and doesn't know about their future career. And I'm like,
yeah, that totally changes when you start going to school.
I was like, yeah, definitely can empathize there, Ren. I think that's interesting to bear into account. There are a lot of single individuals may throw themselves out of the running and discount their own abilities. You know, if you have a spare room for an Airbnb, you've got a spare room for fostering or adopting.
For a troubled teenager, yeah.
Absolutely. And not even necessarily troubled, but, somebody who needs a space, you know.
If they're 16 and a half, you have 1.5 years.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, probably longer, too.
Yeah.
Give them a little, somewhere to stay while they get back on their feet, that sort of thing. So 2 years, 3 years commitment, help out a young'un who needs help. Good stuff. The day I can afford myself, I will probably actually start looking into this. And I'm not even saying that just because it's the episode's topic. I've actually met quite a few people who've been through the foster care system, and the need for foster care parents who are well suited for teenagers, because a lot of people who adopt, you know, they want to start from scratch and raise them as their own, and not many people, it doesn't appeal to that many people. Whereas, like, I've dealt with, through my teaching experience, I have done kindergarten all the way through second year university, all years inclusive. And I think I probably got along best with the teenagers, especially the ones who hated everyone. Probably because those were my friends in high school. And, you know, a lot of them, they're just not used to being treated like an adult. So they start giving you lip and you're like, shut up, kid. They're not used to that.
Yeah.
And then they speak back to you. And that's okay, because they're not really used to having a voice, to having a space to challenge other people, or to talk back, or they talk back all the time, but they're not used to being listened to when
they talk back. Are you suggesting that the CAS should start recruiting from, like, TAs and teaching assistants?
Possibly, yes. Also, I think angry drag queens would be really good for teenagers.
So if you're an angry drag queen and listening to this, be sure to file for adoption ASAP, as you are more than qualified.
Just like I could see them being like, you do you, and then they do themselves like, that was stupid. What did you learn? Like, I could see that being a potentially constructive environment where they help them and protect them, but also let them make their own mistakes, which is very important for teenagers. You need to let them make their own mistakes, but also be there to help them afterwards, clean up the mess, you know, scoop up the vomit into the bucket.
That's true. So we obviously mentioned earlier that Clean Bandit and Years and Years are in an intimate relationship, so we thought we'd play one of each. What made you choose this particular song?
I like it.
Okay, then we're playing out with Dust Clears.
Also, they actually have a reference to a famous painting in the music video.
Oh, what's the painting?
The Skating Priest.
Oh, I can't say I'm familiar with that particular painting, but we will, you know, soon find out. All right, and we shall...
What are you doing?
Oh, I don't know. I'm sorry.
Okay, there you go.
All right.
All right, thank you for listening.
Bye-bye.
Imagine if the life that you shared wasn't really there. It was made up in your mind, could be anyone, anywhere. 'Cause you'd been living in a world of your own design, undermined. In another place, other space and time. As the dust clears and it all starts to disappear.